Welcome to Anthony T's Horror Show. I'm Anthony T. In this episode, I will be interviewing actress Trista Robinson, who has a new film out called Purgatory Road on DVD and Blu-ray. I also have an open letter to a special someone. You'll find out soon in the news who that person is. And I'm also going to talk about three actresses that you should keep an eye on for 2018, as Women in Horror Month is wrapping up. So I figured I'd share three of my favorite actresses that you should keep an eye out for in indie horror. But first, let's start off with the news. Starting off the news, Dread Central recently reported that Jason Blum wants to make 10 more Halloween films. But there is one problem with that plan. He does not even have the rights to make a sequel yet. Now, I don't know what he's thinking, because it is such a dumb idea. This is like, it's like, why do we need 10 more Halloween films? Seriously, Jason Blum. I know you made a lot of money with Halloween, but doesn't mean, oh, you can make 10 more films on the series. This whole thought is crazy. Who in their right mind wants to make 10 more films of a franchise after the first film? I admit, it made over $100 million. But I don't think 10 films are going to make $100 million. It'll be lucky to have a combined total of $100 million. As later in the show, I will address this in an open letter to Jason Blum, because I really need to talk him off the ledge of this stupid idea, because look what happened with the original franchise. After four films, the series went downhill. You had probably two of the worst films in the franchise in Halloween 5, The Revenge of Michael Myers, in Halloween, The Curse of Michael Myers, and you also have a guilty pleasure thrown in the original set of Halloween films, Halloween Resurrection. And I'm sorry, but Michael Myers and guilty pleasure films leave a bad taste in my mouth. But I'm going to try to talk you off that ledge, Mr. Blum, because this is ridiculous. I don't know if it's even more ridiculous than Child's Play reboot. But I've written an open letter, and I will read it later in the show. Sticking with DreadCentral.com, they also broke news that both Godzilla vs. Kong and Annabelle 3 had their release dates bumped up. First, Godzilla vs. Kong, the film that's being directed by Adam Wingard, who you may know from Blair Witch, The Guest, and You're Next. The film was originally supposed to be in theaters May 2020, but now the film will be released on March 13th, 2020. I really can't wait for this film. It's an Adam Wingard film, plus it's Godzilla vs. Kong. So, I can't wait for this film. And they also announced that Annabelle 3 will be hitting theaters sooner, as the film was supposed to be originally released July 3rd this year, but they moved it to June 28th, a week earlier. Hey, I'm telling you, the Child's Play remake is doomed to fail, and this is now another reason why, because Annabelle is a proven franchise, with two of its films doing very well at the box office. So it's getting more and more likely that this Child's Play reboot will fail. And Warner Brothers is trying to take advantage of the recent so-so teaser trailer of Child's Play by moving Annabelle 3 to June 28th. And I think it's going to pay off for Warner Brothers, because Annabelle is an established franchise, while the upcoming Child's Play reboot has been getting a lot of negative buzz from fans. And I can now easily see the Child's Play reboot not lasting a month in first run theaters. Blue Underground recently announced the release date for one of Lucio Fulci's most controversial films, The New York Ripper. Now, this will be a 3-disc set with a Blu-ray, DVD, and a CD soundtrack, which has me sold. Plus that, there'll be a new 4K restoration of the film. The film is set to be released on June 25th. More info to be announced later. Definitely a release that, if you're a big Lucio Fulci fan, you should definitely keep an eye on. Finally, in convention news, Scarecon New England recently announced its first guest. It's a pretty big one to start off with, which is very good, and someone I'm very excited to meet. And it's Heather Langenkamp. You may know her from A Nightmare on Elm Street, A Nightmare on Elm Street 3 Dream Warriors, and Wes Craven's New Nightmare. I can't wait to meet her. Definitely one of those people I've been always wanting to meet. And it's kind of cool that she's coming to ScareCon New England, considering that A Nightmare on Elm Street is turning 35 years old this year. So it'll be great meeting her for the first time. She's definitely someone I'm looking forward to. Also, in other ScareCon news, they recently announced that they will be doing the first annual Podcaster Awards at this year's ScareCon New England. Now, the categories are Best Horror Pop Culture Podcast, Best Podcast Host, Most Humorous Horror Pop Culture Podcast, Best Long Form Podcast, Best Short Form Podcast, Best Interview / Guest Spot, and ScareCon Fan Favorite. Now, you can vote on all these awards at www.scarecon.com. And please feel free to nominate both Anthony T's Horror Show and Doc Discussion Podcast with Philip Perrone and Michael Darwin. And you know what else? Yours truly will be at ScareCon New England. Not sure yet what I'll be doing there. I'm hoping to do a show like I did for Rockin' Shock, as I recently put in my media credential application in. So, keeping my fingers crossed. Stay tuned. But I'll be doing something at ScareCon New England. Not sure yet, but stay tuned. ScareCon New England takes place from June 7th through the 9th in Framingham, Massachusetts, at the Sheraton Framingham Hotel and Conference Center. And that's the news. Besides Anthony T's Horror Show, you can also listen to these other fine podcasts on the Doc Discussions Network. Doc Discussions, hosted by Philip Perrone and Michael Darwin. You Know Nothing, Jon Snow, a Game of Thrones podcast. Bullets, Brothels, and Bots, a Westworld podcast.
Halloween Boutique Psychotronic Reviews, and Searching for American Gods. You can find Doc Discussions on the web at www.docdiscussions.com. And Doc Discussions is also available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. Warning! The following commentary doesn't represent the views of Doc Discussions or the Doc Discussions Network. In other words, there are my views only.
Now as I wrap up Women in Horror Month here on Anthony T's Horror Show, I want to tune you into three horror actresses that you should be keeping an eye out for. Because these actresses are really good actresses and I really like what they're doing in the indie horror film world. I see a lot of good actresses out there. But there's three actresses that you should be really paying attention to as their work has been very good and definitely worthy of your attention. The first actress that I'm going to talk about is Ellie Church. Now, she's an actress that I first discovered in Headless. Now, that was like, it was produced by Scott Shermer. And the reason I first saw Headless was because that was like the film within a film in Found, where the film was playing on the television. That film's a very disturbing film. Definitely check it out, but it's one of those films where you can probably only see once because it's just so disturbing. But back to Headless. This was the first time that I saw Ellie Church. At that time, I did not know she would become this big. But after roles in films like Harvest Lake, Skeleton in the Closet, Amazon Hotbox, and most recently, The Batman, in which she turns in a very good performance in that film, and really helped drive that film, because that film is downright twisted, but it's her performance that really makes this film worth sitting through, as that film is her best performance of her career so far. That's definitely a film you should check out. I liked it a lot, even though it's very twisted and everything. But definitely check The Batman out, because it's very twisted. And Ellie Church does have a great performance in that film that people should check out. She's a very talented actress. I do see big things in the indie horror world for her, because I really think she can be one of the top indie horror actresses if she isn't already, because as she always does a great job making her characters very entertaining and interesting. And one of her upcoming films is Mania, which leads me to my next indie horror actress that you should be keeping an eye on. It's Jessica Cameron. She directed the film Mania with Ellie Church and Tristan Risk. Now, this film's been kind of in limbo for a couple years, but hopefully that film gets a release soon. But Jessica Cameron is a very good actress as well, whether it's seeing her in films like All Through the House or in a lead performance in her own directorial debut, Truth or Dare, to most recently Stephen Bryo's The Song of Solomon, which she was great in that film, given the complexity of that role that she was in. That's definitely a film you should check out if you're really into gory horror films, as her performance in that film was very good. She's definitely an actress that you people should keep an eye out for, because she really does have the talent to play any kind of character. And oh, I just forgot something, Red Eye as well, as she was really good in that film too. She's a very talented actress. I'm hoping she gets more roles, and I'm also interested in seeing what her directorial career takes as well. So she's another actress that you should keep an eye out for in the coming months. And the third and final actress that you should be keeping an eye out for is Jamie Bernadette. Now, she's also a very good actress as well. She's done some really good films like 420 Massacre, which is a stoner slasher film, which was one of the better indie films of the year, even though it didn't make my top 10 list. She's been in other films such as All Girls Weekend, where she was also very good in the lead role there. And she also recently had a lead role in the film The Sixth Friend, which I'll talk about more later, in which not only she is the lead in the film, plus she also wrote the screenplay for the film, as she co-wrote it with the film's director, which I'll talk more about that film later in the show. But she's definitely an actress to keep an eye out for, as one of her upcoming projects is the sequel to the cult classic I Spit on Your Grave, titled I Spit on Your Grave Deja Vu. She's definitely an actress to keep an eye out for. And all of these three actresses that I mentioned are all actresses that you should be keeping an eye out for in the coming months, as they're very talented and they always manage to put in good performances in whatever film they are in.
Hey guys, this is Steven Christina. I am the founder, owner, creator, and host of Super Retro Throwback Reviews. Are you looking for the best movie reviews, music reviews, video game reviews, and Comic-Con coverage all around? Well then, look no further. Definitely check out Super Retro Throwback Reviews on YouTube and our new audio podcast, the new and improved Super Retro Throwback Reviews Audio Files version 2.0 on the following media distributors: Podbean, Google Play, Stitcher, SoundCloud, iTunes, and Spotify.
Class is over, John. Time for something new and improved.
Welcome back to Anthony T's Horror Show. I'm with Trista Robinson. She's an actress who has a new film out called Purgatory Road, which was recently released by Unearth Films. Trista, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Now, what made you want to pursue acting?
My aunt was an actress in Pittsburgh. She did a lot of theater, and I lived with her for a while and started doing plays with her, and I really loved it, and I started pursuing acting.
I know she has a lot of horror films on your resume. What drew you to the horror genre?
Thank you for checking out my work. I grew up watching horror with my dad. So horror is very close to my heart. And then when I started auditioning, that's what I started booking. And most of my friends are in the horror community. So it's funny, it just kind of worked out that way, but I'm really glad that it did.
Now, your latest film, Purgatory Road, is available on DVD and Blu-ray. Tell me about the film and your character.
Yeah, thank you. So the film is... it's written and directed by Mark Savage, and Tom Parnell co-wrote it. And it's about these two brothers, Gary Cairns and Luke Albright, and they have a mobile confessional. However, Gary's character, he plays this priest, and due to childhood trauma, he kills people that steal. And my character is Mary Frances, and she sort of drives a wedge between these two characters when she meets them, and she also is a serial killer.
Now, how did you become a part of the film?
I go back with Mark Savage. We've worked together before, and we're very good friends. And he offered me the part, kindly.
Now, what drew you to the character of Mary Frances?
I was so excited to play Mary Frances. I, first of all, had never read a script like this. Second of all, had never played a character like this. I was very challenged because I couldn't figure out how to create an arc for her because she was so badass from beginning to end, and so my challenge was to humanize her, and I think that's what drew me to her.
Now, what were your first thoughts reading the script?
When I first read the script, I was blown away. I'm a horror girl, like we said, so I was so excited to play this role. I also thought the script was just incredibly well written. I hadn't read any other scripts like it. It's almost Shakespearean, the dynamics between the brothers and the father, and I just fell in love with it. But sorry, I forgot the question. Did you ask me the thoughts when I read the script? That's what I thought. I thought, like, wow, this is a script. And then I thought, how am I going to play this character? I can't wait to play her, but how? How do I do it? Did I answer your question? I'm sorry.
Yes. Now, your character in the film is a very twisted serial killer. What was it like approaching a character like this?
It was very exciting, very daunting. I was so happy that I was offered the role because I feel like a lot of times because of my stature, my voice, I don't always get offered roles like this. So I thought it was innovative of Mark. And I was so excited about it. But I watched a lot of documentaries about female serial killers in order to figure out, like I said, how to humanize her, how to give her an arc. And I kind of decided myself that she has these intimacy fears and then she can murder people and then hold them and then it's romantic and beautiful. So that was my way into Mary, so that I wasn't judging her for her horrible deeds, so that I could love her and be her.
Now, was it difficult playing the role?
I mean, shooting technically was difficult because we were in Mississippi and there were tornadoes, and so we'd have to dislocations, and I was sort of trapped in my hotel just because the weather was so severe. So only technically was it difficult. In fact, I used that time to watch all of these docs that I hadn't been able to access before, so it actually, I feel like, really informed my performance, oddly enough. But besides that, I didn't, like, take it home with me in a negative way or anything. I think because I was so on board with her and who she was, and I made it romantic in my mind, that it didn't disturb me because I wasn't afraid of her.
Now, what was it like working with director Mark Savage?
Oh, working with Mark was great, very comfortable. He's, like I said, he's a very good friend of mine, and we have very similar sensibilities. It's not like I had to improv or anything, because everything was in the script. The script was so tight and so great that I was super just happy. And then he was also very receptive to any ideas I had, of course. And we talked about Mary a lot, and we met together a lot here in LA, and we went shopping for her wardrobe together. We really put Mary together before we went out to Mississippi to shoot. So it was great.
Now, I like the way you made the character very psychotic.
Thank you.
Was he one of those directors that gave you the freedom to approach the character that way, or was he strict in what he wanted for the character?
Oh, Mark, fortunately, like I said, we have very similar sensibilities. We're on the same page, which is why we like to work together. So, of course, he would give me direction, and a lot of times the direction would feel awkward. I'm not saying I never second-guessed it. And I've even told him, watching the film back, I can tell those moments that were his direction, and I know that he's right. And it's mostly a lot of technical things, you know, which feels awkward. Sometimes when you're acting, you do things that feel awkward for camera that look good on camera. But as far as Mary, we both understood her. Obviously, he created her, and then he let me take the reins. So it's not like we battled or anything. He totally gave me the freedom and then would gently guide me. But it was pretty, we just developed her together. It was a really easy working relationship.
Now, you also get to spend some time in the film with the two main leads, Gary Cairns, I'm pronouncing it.
It's okay. I think it's Cairns. I might be pronouncing it wrong. I don't know, actually.
and Luke Albright. Mm-hmm. You had very good chemistry with both of them on screen. What was it like working with each of those actors?
Thank you for saying we had good chemistry. I feel that we do, too. You know, it was really interesting. I was really blown away with both of their performances. And I think in real life, we had this... I think Gary has said publicly that he was going through some stuff which lent him to develop his character in a darker place. And I think Luke is sort of, you know, I tease him all the time. I call him Set Dad because he's so sweet and doting, which I feel like that comes across in his character. So I feel like they had such insight into their characters in a really organic way that it created the right amount of tension, you know, that push-pull that's sort of exciting to watch. I can't imagine anyone else playing those roles, actually.
Yeah, truly, I thought the performances in that film were the best thing about the film.
Wow, well, thank you.
Because it kept me glued the entire time. Now, I'm usually not a fan of these serial killers type films, but this film was very good.
Oh, I'm so happy you liked it. Thank you.
Now, how long were you on the set of the film?
I think it was about 20, 21 days. I could be wrong, but, you know, we just screened it in L.A. the other day, a week or two ago, and I think that's what they said in the Q&A. Gary or Mark answered it as around 20-something days. Maybe a little more because of the inclement weather.
Now, what was the mood like on set in the film's tone?
You know, like I said, because of the weather conditions, we were just working. There wasn't a lot of room for weirdness or awkwardness or, you know, it was really, and oddly, I think that helped. You know, there's always magic on set when you're filming. There's always stuff you don't expect. And I think often it can enhance the film if you allow it to. And I think us, you know, fighting the cold in Mississippi and fighting the shooting schedule because we are down these days because of these tornadoes, like, I think it all added to it. I think we were all so focused.
Now, the film has a Southern Gothic feel to it, which was captured perfectly.
Thank you.
Because I've seen films that go the Southern Gothic route and fail miserably. But this film is perfectly, which made it also very good to watch. What was it like working in the rural areas of Mississippi?
Oh, that's such a good question. It was so interesting. Like I said, I don't know if we were recording already, but I mentioned to you I'm from New York and I live in LA, so I don't know much about that area. And it was beautiful, but it was scary. There were these lightning storms. Which I had never seen. I was in my hotel room just looking outside. There was flooding happening. You know, I'm not saying it's always like that in Mississippi, but this was my experience there. We met so many nice people. I love the accent. I love the food. It was all very, very exciting for me.
Now, it was more of a calming experience working on a set in Mississippi compared to a set in a major city like L.A. or New York?
That's a good question. I wouldn't say calming, because we, like I said, we're just fighting these obstacles. But I would say maybe more, for me, exciting, because it was such a foreign experience and such an adventure, and I really didn't know what to expect from day to day. It was a hard shoot, but it was so rewarding at the same time. And I felt myself, this sounds cheesy, but I felt myself growing as a person and an actor.
Now, what was your favorite scene in the film?
My favorite scene? That's a good question. Someone asked me the other day at the Q&A what my favorite scene was, and I said it was the death scene. In the parking garage, because it's beautifully shot, and I do think it's beautifully shot. But today I have a different favorite scene because I love the film. So today my favorite scene would be the final scene with me in the basement. And you can tell I'm being very careful about spoilers, but I think that one.
Spoil it.
Yeah, thank you. I think that one is also beautifully shot, and it was actually the last thing that I shot. Obviously, we shot the film out of sequence, but my last scene was my last scene I shot before going to sleep for a few hours and then hopping on an airplane to come home. So it felt all the more dramatic and exciting and bittersweet.
Now, what was the most difficult scene you filmed?
That's a good question as well. It might have been the parking garage scene that I just mentioned, because we had actually lost that location due to the storm, and then everyone was sort of scrambling, and so I feel like we sort of shot it on the fly when they got this location, which I think worked out wonderfully. I think it's so beautiful. They did a great job with it. But it was difficult because it was I think, unless I'm remembering wrong, it was a little bit ago. It was in the week, and it had been when we were able to secure that studio. So, I think we shot it at like 4 a.m, and it was, had already been a day, but that was what we were able to do. So it was difficult, but I'm so glad it worked out. I watch it, and the way it's shot and the way it's edited, it's so beautiful, and there's a lot of emotion in that little scene.
Now, what were your thoughts about the finished film itself?
I am so proud of the finished film itself. I sorry if I sound stunned. I'm stunned by the film. I think it's so well written, and I'm so happy that it was properly executed, because that's not always the case, especially as an actor. You only have so much control, you know. I don't shoot it. I don't cut it. Sometimes a script does not always translate well. You can't just have a good script. You have to have – everybody has to be really great at their job. And in this film, I'm proud to say that I think everyone knocked it out of the park. I'm so lucky, I'm so impressed, and I'm so humbled by it.
I also noticed while doing some research that you currently have a film that has been winning awards on film festival circuit called Echoes of Fear.
Yes.
It was a co-winner for Best Picture at the Nevermore Film Festival, which will be taking place on March 9th and 10th. In Durham, North Carolina. The film will also be screening at Horror Hound Weekend on March 15th through the 17th in Cincinnati, Ohio. Tell me about that film and your character.
thanks so much for doing that research. The film is called, like you said, I think you said, Echoes of Fear, and there's a website you can check out. It's called you can check it out at echoesoffear.com, and there's a new trailer up there. It's a haunted house movie. So my character is, her name is Alyssa. She moves in with her pet mouse into her grandfather's house after he passes away. And I don't want to give too much away, but the film is shot by Lo Avenue Bradley. Her name's Laurence Avenue Bradley. We all call her Lo. And so she's the DP, and then she also co-directs with her husband, Brian Avenue Bradley. And they wrote it as well. So that was a very cool experience for me to work with a husband and wife team. That was pretty special. And I'm super proud of that film. Thank you so much for mentioning it.
Now, how did you become involved with that film?
That's a very good question. I met Brian and Lo through Mark Savage, who did Purgatory Road, actually. And I had a very small part in their film Malignant. And Gary Cairns, who plays the priest in Purgatory Road, stars in Malignant. So sorry, I know it's all very incestuous and confusing. But that's kind of how the indie horror world is. I met them through Mark. I had a day player role on Malignant, and then they wanted to work with me again. And now we have Echoes of Fear, which is having this amazing festival run. So it's all very special and very surreal and weird.
Now, are you surprised that Echoes of Fear has been successful on the film festival circuit?
Am I surprised? I'm not surprised per se. I knew Brian and Lo were incredibly talented. I knew they had a great script. They would let me watch playback while we were shooting. So I knew Lo's photography was something special. I knew I was a part of something special. But it is overwhelming. I think we've been to 5 festivals, won 5 awards. It is overwhelming. I am, we were surprised at every win. So I am surprised and I'm not surprised at the same time. I'm not surprised that my friends are talented. I'm not surprised that they made this film. I am overwhelmed because we didn't make it with awards in mind. Of course, that wasn't the purpose of the film.
You know if there's any plans for a VOD or DVD release of the film in the future?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think they're sorting through distribution right now, so there's not a lot I can say on that. But the film, I would say, would probably be released towards the fall, since we're going to be on the festival circuit still through the summer.
Besides that film, what are some of your upcoming projects?
I am shooting a Western, which is something I've never done, which is something I'm terrified and excited about. So that will start next month. I'm also not sure how much I can talk about that. Sorry, I might be the lamest interviewee when I'm just like, I can't talk about anything. But I can say that I've never done a Western. I can say I'm so terrified and excited and flattered that I was offered the role. And that role I was offered because the filmmakers saw Echoes of Fear on the festival circuit. So I could not possibly be more grateful, and I'm certainly surprised about that because it is a whole new thing for me. I can't believe it.
Now, do you have any films that are currently on DVD?
Yeah, I have Silent Retreat. I have The Human Race. Sorry, I'm thinking off the top of my head. I feel like you can see those on Amazon Prime. too. If you have Amazon, you can probably watch it for free. And the other, I mean, I have plenty of projects, but I'm not sure, you know, they put things on, they take things off. I'm going through the Rolodex in my head, and I feel like I'm gonna get off this interview and then get yelled at by some filmmaker friend for not plugging something because I can't think of it. Anything.
Okay.
I'm probably gonna get in trouble for not answering that question properly. But please check out The Human Race on Amazon Prime for sure. I'm super proud of it. I played a deaf woman, so I learned sign language for the film.
Now, where can they find you on social media?
My name is Trista Robinson. I'm on Facebook and Twitter by that name. I'm not on Instagram, but for sure, search me. I'd love that.
Well, thank you, Trista, for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me.
No problem, and good luck on the success of Purgatory Road and Echoes of Fear.
Thank you so much.
Have a good
night.
Have a podcast that you want to promote? Well, if you're interested in swapping commercials, you can promote your show here on Anthony T's Horror Show. And in return, I will promote your commercial on my show as well. For more information, contact me at AnthonyT'sHorrorShow@gmail.com. Welcome back. I want to thank Trista Robinson for coming on the show. Definitely check out her new film, Purgatory Road, from Unearthed Films. The film is available on DVD and Blu-ray. You will also get my thoughts on the film soon on Anthony T's Horror Show's YouTube channel, as I recently filmed a video for Purgatory Road, because this is definitely a film you should check out. And I would also put it up there with Close Calls as some of the best of 2019 so far. So definitely purchase Purgatory Road from Unearthed Films. Before I go into my next segment, I want to also mention that a couple of past guests on Anthony T's Horror Show currently have Indiegogo campaigns. First, past guests Kyle Kircher and Bill Fulkerson recently launched an Indiegogo campaign for DVD and Blu-ray pressing of their latest film, Survival of the Film Freaks. Now, they're looking to raise $8,000 by the time their campaign ends. This is definitely a film I'm waiting to see. I've already supported this film. This is definitely a film on my must-see films of 2019. Now, this project still has like another month to go, and it's already reached half of its $8,000 goal. Please support this film, as this film is a documentary on cult cinema. And there's a lot of really good perks, including DVDs, Blu-rays, T-shirts, and more. I would highly recommend you check that out. It's www.indiegogo.com. And also, Troy Escamilla, who was on my show way back, I think episode 2, I think. That's how far the show's going so far. He's directed films such as Potty Night and Mrs. Claus. Now, he started an Indiegogo campaign to raise more funds for his upcoming film, Teacher's Shortage. The film is set to star Brink Stevens, Deborah Lamb, and Kaylee Williams. You can contribute to that campaign also on Indiegogo.com. Now, I decided to, do an open letter to Jason Blum. Now, if you remember in the beginning of the show, I talked about Jason Blum wanting to do 10 more Halloween films. Right now, it's the dumbest idea of 2019 so far, but we got a long ways to go. But I really felt like I needed to try and write an open letter to Jason Blum. I fully know he will probably never listen to this podcast, so. But in the case he does, I had to do this because I gotta talk him off that ledge. It's not like, it's like the worst idea that you can think of. I don't want to see 10 more Halloween films. Don't get me wrong. I love the Halloween series. But after 2-3 films in a franchise, the films usually go downhill. So when I heard about it, it was totally acidine that he wants to make 10 more Halloween films. So I decided to write a letter. Let me cue up my music, and we can start this letter. Dear Mr. Blum, I recently read an article on DreadCentral.com that you wanted to make 10 more Halloween films, even though you don't have the rights to even make Halloween 2. I'm writing to you because I have to talk you off that ledge, because this is one of the dumbest ideas that I've ever heard since I found out that Orion Pictures and MGM were remaking Child's Play and making Chucky a robot. The first reason why you can't make 10 Halloween films is the fact that the original series went downhill after Halloween 4. You had that stupid Cult of Thorn plotline, which ruined both The Revenge of Michael Myers, Halloween 5, and The Curse of Michael Myers, Halloween 6. And it even turned the series into guilty pleasure territory with Halloween Resurrection, as that was bad to watch in a good way. I don't want to ever associate Michael Myers and guilty pleasure films in the same sentence again. The other reason why they can't be 10 more films is the fact that the last time a film franchise went 10 films, the series went into space. I really, really don't want to see Michael Myers in space. Look at Jason X and Hellraiser Bloodlines. Those films, to me, are only known as guilty pleasure films, and I very rarely see them now. Hell, the director of Hellraiser Bloodline refused to have his name on the film because it was so bad that he had to use the famous Alan Smithy credit, so he didn't have to have his name associated with the film. I'm trying to tell you here, do not, under any circumstances, put Michael Myers in space. I hope you reconsider this idea to have 10 more Halloween films, even though you don't have the rights for the sequel, because you'll ruin the success of the recent Halloween reboot, and I really don't want subpar entries in this series. Sincerely, Anthony T. P.S. Can you help produce Machete Kills in space for Robert Rodriguez? I really want to see this film so bad. I want to see Danny Trejo's kick ass in space. Please, please, do it, do it! Want to find out the latest guest announcements and news regarding Anthony T's horror show? You can follow Anthony T's horror show on these social media platforms. Facebook at www.facebook.com/AnthonyT's Horror Show. On Twitter at www.twitter.com/AnthonyT's Horror. And
Instagram at www.instagram.com/AnthonyT's Horror Show.
Welcome back. Now let's wrap up Women in Horror Month here on Anthony T's Horror Show with another film recommendation from a female director, and it's a most recent film. For my film recommendation this episode, I'm recommending a film called The Sixth Friend. If you've seen my YouTube channel, I recently attacked The Asylum for using DVD-Rs for this release and not telling anybody about it. You can find that on YouTube at Anthony T's Horror Show, because I'm not going to go on another rant about it, because I already ranted about it. You can check that out on YouTube, because I want to make this all about the film. Now, this film is directed by Lita Coulton. I apologize if the pronunciation's wrong. Now, The Sixth Friend is an entertaining slasher film with very good performances from Jamie Bernadette, who I mentioned earlier in the show, as one of the three horror indie actresses to keep an eye on. But what makes The Sixth Friend a good film, it's its screenplay. I like how the fact that it's suspenseful throughout, as death scenes and action scenes in the film were executed very well and kept my interest throughout. It also has a very good story too, maybe a little predictable, but still, the story of this film does a really good job keeping you interested in the film. It really is one of those slasher films you should check out, as it's kind of different from all the normal slasher films you would see. The film also has some good direction from Lita Coulton. I apologize if I pronounced it wrong, but her direction in this film is very good. She does a good job keeping everything moving, whether it's the action in the film or the story. Everything is moved in a good pace that is not going too fast. It's going about at the right speed, which I kind of want in a slasher film, so I can have story along with all the killing that goes on, which makes slasher films good. I've seen some bad ones too, where it just rushes everything. Thankfully, this film does not rush its kill scenes, which is a good thing, as it does a great job allowing the film to develop as it goes along. This is a film you should check out, even though I have to mention, if you buy the DVD of The Sixth Friend, that you're probably going to get a DVD-R. Something The Asylum will not let you know, but I feel like I should let you know. And it's quite a shame, because a good film like this, in the hands of a studio that does not care about anything. The only thing they care about is their stupid monster movies. But that's another rant for another time. I talk about more on my YouTube channel, which you can find on YouTube. But I'm definitely recommending The Sixth Friend. As good screenplay from Lita Coulton and Jamie Bernadette, who I forgot to mention also wrote the screenplay for the film. So definitely check it out. The Sixth Friend is my film recommendation for this episode. But beware, you might get a DVD-R instead of a DVD when you buy the film. And it's sad that I have to tell you this, because The Asylum won't tell you. But still, I am recommending The Sixth Friend, because I recommend films regardless of what the studio does with them. Because, let's face it, there are crappy studios out there that will try to blindside you. But definitely rent, buy the VOD of The Sixth Friend, or buy the DVD if you don't mind DVD-R. So my film recommendation for this episode is The Sixth Friend. Now on Anthony T's YouTube channel, I just mentioned my video about how The Asylum is using DVD-Rs for their release of The Sixth friend. That video's up there. In the coming days, you'll see a new episode of Anthony T's Horror Views, where I review Purgatory Road, as you'll get my thoughts on that film. And hopefully, before the next episode, I will have shot the first episode of Viva La Troma, as that's the working title for the new set of episodes for my Anthony T's Horror Show YouTube channel, which you can find on YouTube. Just type in Anthony T's Horror Show in the YouTube search box. Please subscribe, as I'm hoping to get 100 followers so we can finally have an actual URL instead of having to use my own personal URL for this channel. With that, I want to thank you for listening. Have a good day, and support indie horror.